Hey, real quick, I just wanted to let you know that Gabba Gabba Huh is now a record store. Well, not really a store, but a booth at an antique store located in Eastridge Mall in Gastonia, North Carolina. Vintage Village is three stores down from Dillard's on the left. And my booth is on the left side of Vintage Village. It's the one with all the records. You can't miss it. I've got over 1,000 records, toys, t-shirts, DVDs, VHS, all kinds of stuff there. So come check it out. Gabba Gabba Huh Records and Vintage Goods, located in Vintage Village at Eastridge Mall, Gastonia, North Carolina. You are now listening to the Gabba Gabba Huh Talks podcast, where we bring you conversations with people connected to the Carolinas underground music scene. Your host, Mike Phillips of Van Huskins. And just talk for a minute.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land. This is your friend, Jay Garrigan. Hopefully your friend. First of all, thanks for coming down here into my clutter.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. Because like I said, you could have came to Kings Mountain. But I don't ever ask people to drive all the way to Kings Mountain. And you know, unless they want to, or unless they live in that area, just because it's you know, it's only 35-40 minutes down the road, but still, I always have business in Charlotte. There's always something I can do in Charlotte while I'm here.
Yeah, I'm really glad you came out. I have this broken hand, and I've got like hardly any strength in it. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard to grip the wheel.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you said you couldn't even really drive with.
No.
Yeah. That'd be kind of hard to get used to not being able to do like all the things that you need your hand to do, especially if you're right-handed and it's your right hand.
Yeah, I never realized like how, like if you're right-handed, your middle finger is just so in tune with so much of your body.
Yeah.
Your brain and everything else. It's just, the hands are really complex and marvelous. The whole arm, really.
But then again, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to mess up my right hand, but I wouldn't want to mess up my left hand either.
Yeah, definitely.
That one's pretty important to playing an instrument as well.
Yeah. When I first broke the hand, I think like day after, I was like hell bent on proving I could still do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a video of me, like I got a crooked finger, right, sideways, and I'm sitting there playing the guitar. And it's just, okay, I could prove myself I could do that. And I was even, like, demanding. We had band practice, and the guys were like, ugh. But that was the wrong thing to do, I think. But my head was kind of proving to myself that this isn't the end of things.
Yeah, that's not the end. That's
you know, kind of what I was or thinking. even that week I started writing a song. It's not a typical song I would write, you know. But I had a lot of songs coming to me in my head. The next album might be called Nightmare City.
Okay.
just based on like all the hand breaking and all the just everything I've learned.
Yeah.
Mostly about how to manage pain, about a lot of other things. But I wrote a song. And I'm like, you know what? I need to spend the rest of my energy healing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I literally spend. I feel like 90% of my day bending my finger.
Yeah. You don't realize how much you do until you can't.
Yeah. But like forcefully bending it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't bend.
Yeah.
It don't bend.
So I'm talking to Jay Garrigan of the Eyebrows. And so I got all that I've recorded all that. Just
okay.
Kind of typical.
Cool.
I'll start recording. But so let people in on how exactly you messed up your finger and what happened there.
I never really understood PTSD before, and now I do, because when I explain it, it's really difficult to.
Yeah. Well, like, you can do it like
I could do it. I think I could do it now, but you know, it's like. I remember, we'll back up to when I was in the emergency room, and I wanted to see an X-ray, and they showed me the X-ray, and I started panicking. I was like, "Oh my god, that's like in pieces. It's like looks like shredded wheat."
Yeah, I probably would have been the same way.
And it's okay. And I just didn't, you know, I was like, and then, like, you know, you have to, like, explain to, like, people at work what's going on, and you have a hard time doing it. So I'll try to make it a short story.
Yeah, it doesn't say you can kind of give the
But there's a little backstory to it. It. First of all, it was a weird freak accident. Mm-hmm. 100% my fault. But again, no one's fault.
Yeah. Just one of those things that happens.
It was kind of a situation. So earlier in the week, we acquired a stray dog or a new dog. Mm-hmm. We have a bipolar schizophrenic neighbor who the neighborhood's a little bit concerned about. Mm-hmm. And the kind of guy that writes death threats on his door and all kinds of weird weirdness.
Yeah.
And his dog was running around the neighborhood. And I won't say where I live, but the streets are pretty busy if you go. Mm-hmm.
Not too far.
Yeah. Like a lot of traffic, high traffic. And the neighbors were like, we don't know what to do. Dog's wandering around. We told this person, the older owner, mm-hmm. like, hey, your dog's wandering around. He said, I gave her up. I gave her up. She's no longer mine. And we're like, all right, crazy person. So, mm-hmm. you know, my wife does rescue dogs. That's what she does. So she got it out of the street. It gets along with our other dogs. Mm-hmm. Found out its name. I won't name it here. But it's a great dog. Wonderful mm-hmm. dog. However, she likes to jump fences.
Yeah.
And our other dogs, while they're bigger than her, they don't jump the fence. Yeah. So we've got like 5-foot fence. And... I was walking on a lead, which is like a 20-foot line. Because mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, I was trying to gauge her, like, when she jumps a fence and, you know, try to, you know, have treats ready. Say, hey, like, distract her and everything. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of a situation because I was in the backyard. And you've seen it. It's kind of overgrown.
Yeah.
She jumped the fence and kind of out of nowhere, I saw my neighbor and his dog. And I was like, uh-oh. And I thought this new dog was kind of looked aggressive. Probably wasn't. It was barking. Mm-hmm. So I kind of fished her back in close to the fence. And I remember seeing another neighbor pick their dog up over the fence. I thought maybe I could do that.
Yeah,
it's no big deal. Dog's not that big. So I had my left hand under the belly, the right hand under the collar, and I lifted her up. And see, I'm starting to break out in cold sweats.
Yeah.
I didn't know if she was a spinner. So she spun once, fingers cut, twice, three times. I don't know how many times she spun. She wouldn't stop, you know, and I heard a crack. And I was yelling at my neighbor, like he was, you know, kind of like backing off. I was like, please help me. My finger's broken. And I don't really quite remember how the dog got back on my side.
Yeah. But
but my wife was there, and, you know, she's tough. She comes from a tough lot. Mm-hmm. So she's like, oh, we'll just pull it out, put it back in. You know, I'm like, no, we're going to the emergency room. And, so that's kind of how it happened. So, but it was kind of a situation because you can hear other dogs barking now. Mm-hmm. You know, my two dogs were barking. His dog was barking. It's kind of a situation, chaotic, you know, so it was a little chaotic. You know, I did think, well, how can I go around the fence? Mm-hmm. I thought, well, it'll just be easier to pick her up because she's small. Well, not that small. She's like 40, 50 pounds small.
Yeah.
Smaller than my two other 80-pounders.
Yeah.
But, man, and that happened on June 20th. I had surgery on the 27th. Mm-hmm. And I was given a very poor outlook on the day they took my bandages off. Mm-hmm.
If somebody like you or me or anybody that plays an instrument, and it's a bigger part of life, their life as it is yours.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's pretty not the news you want to hear.
Like, I'll probably be stretching my hand like while we talk, but what I'm demonstrating to Mike is I'm trying to make a fist, and it looks like I'm flipping him the bird. Yeah. But I can flip it down almost. Just takes me a minute. I can get it. Not a 90. It's 90 degree angle. It's probably like a 35, 45 degree. I don't know. I didn't major in geometry, but I can't get it get it down so far. But today I was able, so like when you hold up a guitar pick, you want to make like a C. I could do that with my index and my thumb. But when I do it here, I can't. But today I was able to push it. You want your muscles to be able to push it back.
Yeah.
I just learned so much about not only the inside of the finger, but my relationship with pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably according to the doctors, I'm a big wuss.
Oh, I mean, pain is no fun.
But well, I had to call, hope she doesn't mind. I reached out to a tattoo artist, Haley, from Healing Arts. And I was like, hey, man, or Haley, how do you, like, coach people through acute pain? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I wasn't able to touch my fingers. It was just so painful to move. Mm-hmm. And she taught me about breathing and some other resources. Mm-hmm. And then I found, like, this app that teaches you about pain. And what I realized as a songwriter, you're very, or even any kind of writer, any creative person, you're very in tune with your environment because you're really interested in experiencing it and communicating it back out, I think. You know, or like, it's not just having feelings, it's having feelings about the feelings.
Yeah. I get that.
And with pain, you're taught to block all that out. Mm-hmm. Like the pain is relative. The pain is in your head. I was like, okay, so like I do all kinds of weird like visual things when I feel pain. Like I imagine a big banana conducting an out of tune orchestra. He tries to get the back in tune. It doesn't really help. It helps me get through the pain a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I have to try that next time I tweak my back. See if it helps.
Man, there's all it's all about retraining your brain a bit. Mm-hmm. But I have a problem with fight flight. I wrote an album about it. You may be familiar with. Mm-hmm. So also being prone to panic doesn't really help when there's a doctor or a physician assistant.
I understand that as well.
Moving your finger around, you're like, ah, and you're like, they're like, what's wrong with you? You shouldn't be feeling this pain. I'm like, I am. It's all in your head. And I'm like, it is.
Yeah.
But they don't. The thing is, they didn't give me a path to figure it out. I had to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I ready to play a show? I guess I could play one tomorrow, you know, with two fingers.
Yeah. You've got one coming up fairly soon. Yeah. We'll talk about that one, too. So I was going to ask, like, do you think you're going to be ready to play, or did you have a backup plan for, like, somebody else to play your song?
I wanted to play that week. It was broken.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did have one practice, and I lasted 15 minutes. I was like, I'm in too much pain. I can't do it.
It would be hard to just...
Well,
because I tend to use this finger, the one
middle one. Yeah. The thing I actually realize is that I'm a reckless guitarist and a reckless singer and a reckless performer. That's where I think a lot of the showmanship comes from. And actually the playing style is reckless.
Yeah.
So now I'm suddenly in a place where, you know, instead of, you know, like, my cuticles are going to be all bloody because I'm just attacking the guitar. Now I'm kind of be like, well, I guess I have to play it. You know, part of the reason I could touch my index and thumb is I was running scales. I never run scales. I think I know like three scales.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what really helped get, you know, me to be able to play, but not play like I used to. So I don't know. Maybe this new show, actually, I've been doing a new thing before the break. It's more, you know, when you're singing the songs, there's one mindset as a performer, you want the audience to have a good time, so you're going to be ham and do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I kind of switched my mindset. I close my eyes and I try to let go, give over, channel. Mm-hmm. I try to be present, not in myself, but in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's working.
Okay.
So maybe with the hand being, me not being a reckless player and me being more searching more inward live, which isn't always easy to do.
Yeah.
I think that might be a new thing for the eyebrows. We've been kind of getting there last few shows, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's, maybe that's the evolution of, you know, what at least what I do live. Mm. And, you know, the band's fabulous enough to, like, you know, Sean's trained. We follow each other.
Yeah.
You know, I'm usually the one to screw up an arrangement. Then he just, you know, that's what you get for playing with a guy for 23 years.
That's me and Eric. I mean, we've been playing together for 30 years now, yeah. Off and on. I mean, we had some time off, but
you just read each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know?
Yeah.
And Darren's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't, we're the kind of band, we don't sweat. Like, if we make a mistake, we don't care.
Yeah.
We really don't. Although, sometimes I want to start a song. Mate, we're the kind of band, if something's going wrong, we just finish the song. We don't, yeah. Even if it's so wrong.
I'm of the mindset that if it happens within the first, like, a couple of measures, like, yes, go ahead and stop and start over. But if you're, like, a minute in the song, you got to plow through it.
Yeah.
Even if you're 30 seconds into the song, probably just go ahead and plow through it.
Unless, like, every string is, like, you know, two steps out of tune.
Yeah. That'll happen sometimes, too.
But, yeah, I think I don't know what to expect. Maybe I'll go crazy. Who knows?
And that show will be with Occult Fracture and King Saul and the Heretics.
Yes.
And that is September 1st. September 1st, yeah.
At Tommy's in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's gonna be I'm really excited because I'm a big fan of both of those bands.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited for that show.
And I've always wanted to play with both of those bands, and I get to play with both of them the same night. So. Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how everything goes. Hopefully everything goes great. I guess, have you been practicing lately? Or not yet?
You know, earlier in the finger break, I was practicing a lot. I haven't. We do have rehearsal tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
But I have not, just because, like, I feel like, well, I've been running, like I said, chords and scales and playing along with songs I like.
Yeah.
Not mine.
Yeah.
I've been doing that kind of thing. Not really active practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I'm an active practicer anyway.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same. Like, yeah. I like to get together and rehearse and practice as a band.
Yeah.
But when I'm at home, I tend to just, if I'm playing, I'm just trying to come up with bass lines or guitar riffs. And, you know, I get bored playing our songs. It's like, if everybody else was here, I'd love playing this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like, I skip over that.
Yeah.
I try to practice. I mean, the vocals... It's a, for me, it's an athletic thing, so I have to, you know, get that. When I do practice vocals, you know, I bought an online course during the COVID.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I'm singing wrong. You know, that those actually help. Because I don't know if it's an age thing. I did notice I was playing a show, and all of a sudden, anything that came out of my mouth was like a quarter higher than it should be, and I couldn't, or a fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't fix it. And I was like, what's going on? And it's like, oh, I need to get my core in shape a little bit more so I can sing that way.
Well, that's one of the beauties of just yelling. You don't have to worry so much about it. Like,
I always wanted to.
Because we just yell, and we don't have to worry if it's in key or the same as it was last time.
I wish I was a better screamer or yeller, because that's the music I like.
Yeah.
But I have this... I'm not saying it's pretty, but people have told me it's you got a pretty voice.
Oh, like, you do. You got a great voice, I think.
But I've always kind of hated it. I always wanted to be like, you know, I wanted to sing like Pantera or something, you know?
Let's pick another band, not Pantera.
Well, okay. Yeah, well, because of the current.
Yeah.
Shit.
I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a joke about that.
That's Oliver. Hey, Oliver. Oliver's featured in one of our videos.
Which are we?
I Feel in Love.
Is that all you can do? Love me till I'm black and blue, but don't turn your back and look away. I'm twisted and I'm on the run. Some say that love is free, that's messy chivalry, 'cause no one can escape from this gravity. It pulls us down to the floor.
I usually start my podcast a lot differently than we did. So
okay.
We were sort of already talking about that. It was felt like a good time to go ahead and cover it.
That's fine.
But when you were a kid, I always sort of like to start like way back when you were a kid.
Oh, God.
Like, what was one of the first things you remember about music that just sort of really grabbed a hold of you?
I have no childhood. No. you know, I've got kind of like two memories.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is listening to music, and the second one is playing it.
Yeah.
When I was quite, I would say younger than three, probably two, my father, you know, he was getting his PhD in education, mm-hmm. psychology in Pennsylvania at Lehigh University. So we lived in the Lehigh Valley and we had this house. You know, I'm the oldest of three kids, so I was probably, I don't think my brothers were born yet. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But my father would study. He had a study room, and in the study room was a fish tank full of Oscars. So to a 2-3-year-old, you know, these fish are humongous.
Yeah.
And he had a reel-to-reel tape player, and he would blast 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine being a child, when your first formative memory is being looking at these huge fish floating around and hearing da 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 psh, boom, 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 boom. And I just remember feeling like just all these incredible sensations, even as a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember those sensational feelings with music. And I think that may have helped. I don't know if my dad like played tricks on me because he was studying psychology, or I don't know, or just trying to keep me busy, or maybe he was watching me, you know, kind of really enjoy those moments. But I remember that so,
mm-hmm.
or like Krieg, Hall of the Mountain King, you know, like that shit. So I remember music is very sensational, and then I guess I. You know, my mother used to sit me in front of the piano, and she taught me mm-hmm. what middle C was, and low hit C, and then, you know, I must have been 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
but they would bring people over to watch me play piano.
Okay.
I wasn't Mozart or anything.
Yeah.
But the thing about my parents, though, is they saw music as a parlor trick. It wasn't something to be taken seriously,
mm-hmm.
but it's something I got a lot of enjoyment out of, you know, learning that. And I didn't like practicing the piano, but I liked to noodle on it for mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours, which I think translates to me being a songwriter.
Yeah.
You know, more interested in exploring music than making it perfect.
Yeah.
Because I was never good at that.
Now, you said that your mother kind of showed you a few things. Mm-hmm. Did you have formal lessons, or did she teach you how to play?
I had a few piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, my dad rejoined the military, I think, when I turned 7.
Okay.
I remember I had one piano teacher, you know, to show scales and chords. And mm-hmm. I remember having one rehearsal, what do you call it when you play in front of people?
Recital.
Recital. Yeah. And I couldn't remember the song, you know, so I just played the same thing over and over again. I was never really good. I was never good at the recital part because I was really nervous about it.
Yeah, I was in like middle school band for a little while.
Yeah.
And played trombone.
Yeah, me too.
I won't really go through all that story again because I've told it on the podcast before, but I was fine as long as everybody was playing. But anytime we had to like during class do like play it by ourselves so they could grade us and figure out what seat, I would just freeze up and just not be able to make noises with it. I couldn't do it. So I was always last seat.
You know what? I was always second or third trumpet. There's always someone really good at it.
Yeah.
I played trumpet starting sixth grade. Didn't know what I wanted to play. I kind of wanted to play saxophone.
Yeah.
But instead, for some reason, I got the trumpet.
My nerves would just get the best of me, so.
I took drum lessons for like 6 months.
Yeah.
That didn't suit too. We lived in apartments because, mm-hmm. you know, military, so that didn't work well. I was always good with second or third trumpet. And what that taught me was song composition. It's mm-hmm. not always about the lead singer, the lead note, the lead whatever. There's a whole bunch of shit going on.
Yeah, to make that song.
That's
everything has to be working together.
Or at counterpoints, mm-hmm. you know, counter melodies, and call response. The ability to like, hey, can you play the flute part on your trumpet? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you mean, can I? Because then you think about how to switch parts. It's just really the composition. I think that taught me a lot about so early formative stuff taught me about composition, but you know, then again, the listening side was really like my parents had Sgt. Pepper on a cassette that it probably recorded off an LP, you know, or we had Beatles Abbey Road, like the later stuff, the more like that whole second side of Abbey Road was my favorite thing growing up.
Yeah.
Sgt. Pepper was great, you know, but that's all I knew.
Yeah. So I had a piano when you were young, learned to play piano, played trumpet. When did you pick up a guitar?
I think I started around teaching myself around 14. My dad had an old, like, classical nylon string.
Yeah.
I think I remember throwing it more than playing it initially, just because it's like I couldn't, like, you know, when you first try bar chords and stuff, it's like it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think around 16, I got better at it. For Christmas, I got an electric guitar when I was 16. It was stolen the same day. It's a nice Fender Red Stratocaster.
Oh, wow.
And I got a stupid heavy metal, like, Ibanez guitar instead. My dad did not approve, you know, from the insurance money. But, yeah, I just kind of played in jazz band in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's, like, it's really just a bunch of heavy metal guys.
Yeah.
And urban guys, you know, or church guys and gals, you know, that really jazz.
Yeah.
but you learn like 12 bar blues and
yeah,
stuff like that.
But so was that like a class or a course you could take in?
Yeah. School? Yeah. Yeah. I would sneak out of homeroom and go sneak into band and rehearse and just play guitar.
Where were you living at this time?
That was in Fayetteville.
Okay.
Yeah. Not the lower echelon of shitbaggery, but kind of close. Well, all high schools are, aren't they? Yeah. I was so uncool in high. I was like, I'm definitely not cool now, but I was like extremely like. I don't know if I was king of the nerds, but if there was one, I could have been it, perhaps.
Yeah, I was sort of like right there in the middle where I was kind of nerdy, but I was also like, you know, I had long hair, I was into heavy metal, but I really didn't hang out with those people.
Yeah.
I was in all the advanced classes, so I just hung out with the smart people and was kind of nerdy, but just weird. I was just weird. I wasn't super popular, but everybody like nobody my had story a problem
too.
With me.
It's probably my story too. It's like I was friends with the smart arty kids, but I wasn't that smart enough to be in their class.
Yeah.
Then again, I was, you know, being a military brat, like you're always either behind or ahead of everybody else, and you're socially awkward. You look different. You dress different.
Yeah.
This is way before the internet, folks.
When did you start getting into like cool music or better music?
Cool music.
Than what you like? Sometimes I say punk rock, but you know it's not always punk rock. Sometimes it's.
I'll tell you exactly when. Sophomore in high school, we had a friend. No, I was a junior in high school, and we had a friend who was in band. He went off to UNCG, and he became a radio DJ.
Yeah.
And he would send us back tapes. Tapes and tapes, and we would trade the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's stuff like, you know, Descendants, Circle Jerks, you know, All, Fear, all those bands.
Yeah.
Like, just, and it was like totally like mind-blowing, and I was like, give us more of that. I think I forgot the guy's name was Sam. He had a show called Sam Slam.
Okay.
Sam, if you're out there, thank you. And then like there's some punk rock kid came to town and he had a punk rock band. He had a jacket that said Jesus Crispies, and we're like, what is this about? Like, we had, you know, we no idea.
Yeah.
You know, or a bunch of country mice or something. And the City Mouse came in.
Yep.
Right. And like, or even, I remember the first time I heard The Cure.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds like, oh, everybody knows The Cure. No, you got to understand, when you first heard and saw The Cure, and you saw people into The Cure, you're like, what's up with these kids that, like, you know, like, ripped up t-shirts and baggy clothes and the hairs everywhere? I was like, what? They dance. I like the way they dance. You know, it's like, or we would ride around in cars and listen to, like, Violet Vems and stuff, you know, from the older kids that had cars.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, like you said a minute ago, there wasn't the internet back then. So a lot of this stuff, if you were in a smaller town or if you were more isolated, it wasn't like you could just find it.
Yeah.
You had to be shown. Know somebody. Somebody had to give you the keys to it, like, yeah. kind of let you know what it was.
Exactly. So. And then as you got older, it's like you relied a lot on the magazines or the like indie zines.
There was good music on the radio when I was a kid, but it was still like, you know, a while before I got into really good music.
Yeah, my music taste was strange. I remember, like, in sixth grade, I listened to AM radio in Texas. I don't know. They played, like, Diana Ross and Rick Springfield and shit like that. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me? But I started getting, there's a metal channel there. Mm-hmm. And I think the Bullies, like, were into that music. So I kind of, like, didn't like it, but I used to sneak over to a friend's house. He had a record player, and he had all the AC/DC, Back in Black, and Dirty Deeds.
Yeah.
And I was just begging him to keep playing that, man. That's, like, incredible.
Yeah.
Like, where's JJ? Oh, he's listening to AC/DC with his friend Gary, or whatever, you know. But, yeah, I mean, you had to have a friend, and it's like, friendships were based around listening to music back then. Because you would introduce music to each other.
Yeah, yeah. And most of my friendships today are still pretty much based around music too. So some people grow out of that.
It's kind of interesting when you have friends who aren't into like music. I guess like work situations.
Yeah, yeah. I know the people you're talking about.
You know,
or they like music, but they don't really like music. They just listen to music.
Or you come across that one person who actually like becomes a fan. Mm-hmm. And they don't let go. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Because those are cool people to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
But, as you get older, I've always found it interesting to meet different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. I met someone who doesn't listen to music.
I used to work with a guy who said he didn't listen to music at all, but now he was from India, and he said that he would put on like traditional Indian music in the background, but he didn't really listen to music, and he didn't like any kind of popular music at all.
This was in a work IT setting, and I said, "Dude, I got to talk to you some more." It's like, "What do you do?" He's like, "Oh, I'm marlin fishing." I'm like, "Well, when you're fishing, do you ever listen to the rhythm of the waves?" Mm-hmm. He's like, "No, not really." Like, I don't know if he's just being like contrary.
Possibly, but.
Or really, there's people like that exist. You know, having a musical mind like you and I, it's hard to fathom. But you have to reach out. You have to reach out beyond to who you are. You know, just to learn about the world and life, and you know, one of the harder lessons I've learned in COVID was a lot of the things that I value. Like good music, certain bands. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
Like if I'm trying to market my band to fans of Big Star, there's not enough fans of Big Star.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
Or
what
even
saying.
Power pop to really like try to induce your music to.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard to find that popular band too that fits like because I've tried to explain it, especially when you're talking about. People you work with, and they're like, "Oh, you play in a band? What's it like?"
Well,
punk rock, for lack of a better term, but it's a little bit of, you know. And then I try to think of like, they go, "Was it like Green Day?" Well, no, it's nothing like Green Day.
Yeah,
you just—it's hard to think of that mainstream example.
It's the hardest thing to do. It's like, what do you sound like? Like, describe your band, and what bands do you sound like? Mm-hmm. And throughout my air quote career.
Which we're going to talk about in a second.
It's been a criticism. It's like, you don't have a certain genre. I'm like, well, I feel like the songwriting ties it together.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that. And
you know, but if I say we play garage rock or psych rock, people get mad. They're like, "You're not a garage rock band." I'm like, no, but it's the closest thing I can think of.
And I like bands like that. They don't really fit into a... like just an easy explanation or an easy genre or whatever. Yeah. You can kind of like me and Eric say, we just want to play what we want to play. And it doesn't have to sound like the last song, and it doesn't have to sound like a specific thing. We can do it. And if it works, it works. We're just going to play it.
By the way, I really hope Van Heskens gets it back together.
Well, we may, I mean, there's that's the door is still open for that.
We played like, I think I played at least two solo shows with your band, which is just the oddest.
That's kind of strange, but
the oddest.
But I love shows like that. It was too. Great. Like those kind of shows are my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And I think at least one of them, we didn't have very many people come out either, but it was like your show was amazing that night.
Oh.
It was cold. It was, I think, close to Christmas.
I'm lost without you every day. Ooh, I travel from my dead star. Oh, space is weird and you're not there. Cause I'm
about the solo shows I do, I try to make them very unique. Like, they're songs I think I sang that night that I'll probably have already forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, but at the time I thought they were, had potential, or they were top of mind.
Yeah. But me and Erica, we're working on something else.
Oh, good.
Maybe a little ambitious what we're going to try to do. We'll see.
Van. I'm wearing a Van Halen shirt.
But, you know, the door's still open for Van Huskins to get back together at some point to do what we, you know, if everybody gets on the same page. That's all I'll say about that.
All right.
But I'm pretty excited about what we're working on now. It's just we haven't been able to get the whole band in the room at the same time yet. That'll happen hopefully next weekend.
Even as a three-piece, it's difficult because you do three schedules and...
Yeah, we're adding a fourth member in. Oh, wow. And we're attempting two basses, and we'll see how that works. Although it might not be on every song, because me and the other bass player could also switch off on guitar every now and then.
You're doing like a Melvins, Pincus / Steve?
Yeah, we'll see. Something along those lines, but not probably that style of music. It's going to sound more like Van Huskins.
Oh, okay.
With two bass players.
We remember Hugo Largo.
that's the unfortunate thing.
Do you remember Hugo Largo? They had two bass players.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Ned's Atomic Dust Bin.
Yeah.
Girls Against Boys.
Smile Tap. Or everyone play a bass. Big Bottom.
Well, let's get back to talking about you. And so besides the, you know, being in, you know, playing trumpet in band and then jazz band in high school, what was your first band? And did you start in high school? Did you start playing?
In high school, slim pickings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you get lucky. Like, there was the heavy metal band. The heavy metal guys played in the heavy metal band. They covered Judas Priest, and everybody loved them.
Yeah. We got lucky. Me and my best friend got into the music together. Yeah. We decided to start a band. Then we had another friend that played drums and was actually really good. And another friend that played guitar that took some convincing. But that's how we did it.
Well, I had a really good friend. I hope he doesn't mind mentioning his name. I haven't talked to him in a while. I need to give him a call. His name is Mike Handley, and he became my college roommate, and we had a band in college too. But in high school, I think the first band was Lost Cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a keyboard player. Mike was the drummer. Had a bass player who played in that other punk rock band that I mentioned. It was like a one-off.
And this was in Fayetteville? Or?
Yeah, and we played the show, and I had this modulation delay pedal. And what I would do is I would just kind of, you know, we had a little, I don't think the band understood what I was doing. Mike, the drummer, did, but I would just mess with the pedal and make a lot of noise, like a little whistles and And I remember people just kind of looking at me, like real, I remember my band director looking at me like, he saw, I don't know what he saw. I don't think it was like, it wasn't like, what the fuck is this? Get away. It was more like, what's this kid thinking? Like, what's he doing? This is new. This is interesting. And it was definitely new and interesting for a Fayetteville audience, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used to really enjoy putting my guitar up against the speaker of this solid state Fender Princeton chorus and turn the chorus on and messing with the chorus knob to get the right kind of feedback. I just love that sound.
Yeah, yeah. You still do a lot of like playing with pedals and stuff like that. At least, yeah. Especially during your solo shows that you say, like you say,
yeah. There's a certain amount of I like to play the space around the guitar mm-hmm. as much as the guitar.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of really interesting things you can do if you understand the relationship between your guitar. The feedback coming through, like, it can be musical. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, ear piercing, you know, I'm gonna make you shit your pants kind of yeah. or run away screaming. The way it could be very musical. Mm-hmm. Sonic Youth taught us that.
Oh yeah,
right. That feedback and noise and other kinds of, you get your strings to vibrate mm-hmm. on their own.
Mm, yeah,
you know, because you understand that if you sit a certain way, your A string is gonna vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain pedal at a certain volume with your at a certain angle, and it's quite pleasing.
Yeah,
to me. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. but the high school band, Mike and I played in a band called Pete Gorgeous, which was a 3-piece, and we had no idea what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were more popular bands playing around. We were totally like an art band because, like, you know, pretty much untrained
mm-hmm.
people who liked, I would say, more 80s art rock, like, you know, than like punk rock at the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, we really liked Love and Rockets.
Yeah.
That great kind band. Of stuff.
Yeah. Were you writing original songs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote some originals back then.
Yeah.
It was all. I was all, for me. It was always all original.
Yeah,
because I couldn't remember the words correctly or the solos correctly to other people's music.
Yeah, we started with like sort of a combination of we figured out how to write a song by learning how to play somebody else's song, and then it was like, ooh, let's write this song, but oh, we want to play this song too. So we did a combination mm-hmm. of covers and originals. Too many covers. When yeah. I go back and watch our old shows, I'm like, oh man. We should only play like maybe one or two covers. Why don't we play five?
Or, you know, in Pete Gorgeous, they would recommend we play it. Like, we used to do a version of Sympathy for the Devil, but mm-hmm. I would just kind of burn it yeah. at the stake.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, to me, it was like as if the Butthole Surfers. Yeah. To me, it was like as if it was the end of a Butthole Surfers set. You know, we did a version like that. It's pretty much unrecognizable because I wasn't familiar with the tune.
Yeah.
Then, I'm familiar with it now. But
so did you record any music with that band, or
there's probably some cassette tape somewhere?
Yeah it's always good because I talked to some people and they're like, oh no, we didn't know how to record then. And I mean, you know,
yeah,
we learned how to use a 4-track,
yeah,
but we would also just set a jam box up in the corner and record that way too. Well, like some bands don't even have that, or they had it and it's long gone.
When I did join after that band, I played in a band called Boyle.
Okay. Was it that Boyle from?
It's from Charlotte.
From Charlotte, okay.
I hope it's okay if I mention his name, the late Fred Hutchins.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fred was actually very, very profound on how I think about music.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced me to Captain Beefheart.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, when he was living in that famous house with the skate park behind it, yeah. I think, you know, there's some anti-scene G.G. Allen.
There's a lot of history
there.
That house, yeah.
You know, Kodar used to live there. Radock used to live there.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd practice in the upstairs. And I really did feel like the country mouse met the city mice. Yeah. Like, I was like, I was out of my league.
So was that the first thing you did when you moved to Charlotte? The first
After Pete Gorgeous.
Okay. That was,
yeah.
Pete Gorgeous was here as well.
But Boyle, I think I played maybe 2 or 3 shows with them, and like, you know, Fred Mills loved it.
Mm-hmm. Play at the Milestone, or
yeah, and it, you know, Boyle was a very Beefheart inspired band.
Mm-hmm. I love Boyle. Every show was amazing. So it's possible I saw. I'm trying to figure out if I maybe saw you when you.
I was kind of ancillary.
Yeah.
And I think I was in it for like the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I was in before Kevin, the late Kevin,
okay.
Joined.
Yeah,
and then they all moved to Boone and
yeah,
you know, did their thing. But after that, I think my next band was Second Skin.
Okay.
Joining Deanna Campbell and Dana Pennis. And that's y'all, Dana's from Fetchin' Bones.
Yeah.
So I had a few English classes at UNCC with Dana. Mm-hmm. I went up to her one day and said, "Aren't you? I just saw you on MTV like an hour ago. What are you doing here?" You know? And we became friends, and I went out to a couple of their shows, and I think it was a New Year's Eve show, and Dana asked me to audition. She says, "We're thinking of making a band. Do you want to try out?" I said, mm-hmm. "Sure." And I think Clay Richardson was playing drums from Fetchin' Bones. So if you could imagine, so Clay's a school of Berklee School of Music graduate.
Okay.
All right. Like, he's better in drum machines. He's more, you know, you have Dana, and they're both, you know, they just got off, you know, major label. Mm-hmm. She's very, very good musician. Mm-hmm. Deanna Campbell, phenomenal songwriter. And then me, I think I was, how old was I? 22?
Okay.
22, I had an Ibanez Akstar, a solid state Fender amp. And for whatever reason, they liked me. I think because I was so naive. And then the band changed its name to Violet Strange. Things that, like, most people never get to do. I mean, I'll probably never get to do again. You know, open for big bands.
Yeah.
You know, like B-52s, mm-hmm. Indigo Girls, Melissa Etheridge.
Now, was that, like, local, or did you tour?
Oh, this is, well, between Charlotte and Atlanta.
Okay.
We would get on a show.
Yeah, yeah.
A show or two. Mm. But the touring was nonstop, and I feel like, I wasn't really in touch with the Charlotte music scene because I was always on the road, mm-hmm. like between 92 and maybe 95 or 6.
Okay.
And then, I worked with some great studio people that I really learned a lot from. Mm-hmm. You know, the great Ed Stasium.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He did all the Ramones and, you know, Living Color and, you know, Glass Knight and the Pips and all that. All that stuff. I worked with Jeff Tomei, who just finished Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins, and Holes Live Through This. I worked with Clint Steele, who's the guitarist in The Swans.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Learned a lot from all those guys. Mm-hmm. Probably a person or two I'm missing, I'm not naming, but yeah, this is just studio experiences of... Mm-hmm. Which really translates to even the new album that we're going to put out, because I recorded half the album and mixed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that band gave me some really great experiences.
Yeah.
And then I think around 98, I joined Laburnum.
Okay, I remember that band.
It was kind of a weird situation, because the lead singer asked me to join as their lead singer, mm-hmm. Wes. I was like, "What are you talking about? You're the singer." Keys. things, and they want to. So I'm not a trained singer. And supposedly the duties I took over as lead singer of Laburnum was quite controversial amongst the scene.
Okay.
But you know, whatever, I gave it my best. And I got them back to up to New York playing label showcases, and
yeah,
you know, the band imploded and moved on. Then I turned 30. You know, I started a band called Pop Rocket, which is really, to me, the eyebrows of Pop Rocket's really the same band, because it's still me and Sean.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know, in retrospect, I never really liked the name Pop Rocket. Thought it was too much surface advertising. Like, it's not clever enough.
Yeah.
You know? It was the summer, the end of our love. Was it a ghost or bad memory? You walked that line. You said, I'm wasting my time. 99 miles of bad road. Kicked me in the head and left for dead. We had at least like 4 iterations of Pop Rocket. And the funny thing is about people are fans of a certain iteration. They don't like the other iterations for some weird reason. Like, you know, they like us with a certain bass player. And Joe Coleman, who owns the Muse, he was our last bass player.
Okay.
And I think we evolved into, Sean and I wanted to be more of a touring rock band, and Joe's availability was more like maybe like showcases and, you know, supporting like, you know, the great Tosco events and all these things, which is great. It's not what I think Sean and I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then, let's see. My eye thing happened. I got this terrible eye disease. Made 1,000 times worse by LASIK I shouldn't have had.
Oh.
And I just became really uncreative. And then, actually, there's another band before that, after that. I think I joined Transmission Fields for a while.
Okay.
I was their everything guy. I played like baritone, guitar, keys, sang backup.
Yeah.
I had fun in that band.
Okay.
Oh, and then I had this terrible solo deal with an indie label I won't mention. But I was literally held hostage for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Didn't make a dime.
I was going to say, that's no fun.
But I had some really interesting shows.
Yeah.
I opened for like people like Orleans. Ambrosia.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
John Cafferty, the Beaver Browns.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's like I got these really weird shows on this label, which, you know, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah.
Because I met all these cats.
So, like, none of the music ever came out, or?
It came out, but I never saw a dime from it.
Yeah.
I never saw stats on it. I couldn't collect fan data on it. And again, this is before, like, you know, like fan data was a thing, I think, you know. I just didn't really get anything out of it. Like, it didn't benefit. I'm not sure if it benefited me except for some really interesting live show experiences. But then, after Transmission Fields, the eye thing happened.
Now, what was the deal with eye?
Oh, well, it's like...
I mean, you don't have to... I'll know if it's super important.
But. It's a terribly painful condition where the top three layers of my corneas come off.
Ooh.
They don't... It's like carpet that won't lay, the cell layers. It's really bad in the mornings, and sometimes I can't see.
Yeah.
Or see well enough to work. And I've got a good relationship with my workplace where it's like, hey, I can't come in until noon. I can't see.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, the morning of my finger surgery, my right cornea tore, and I was sitting there. It's like, I don't know what's more painful. I really don't know what's more broken. But it's something I learned to navigate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the time, I did post a lot about it because I didn't know. And then the doctors would tell each other, or tell you what's happening. Mm-hmm. What happened was I shouldn't have had LASIK surgery. I wasn't a good candidate for it.
Yeah.
And I had this underlying eye disease that's super rare. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, like Duke University wants me to go up there and they want to study me. And I'm like, I got a job.
Yeah. How much are you going to pay me?
Yeah. It's like, I think I can live with it. Yeah. You know, I learned how to manage it, but it's still an issue. But I became really uncreative. Mm-hmm. And then Bruce and Sean, my drummer, from Temperance League invited me to sit in on bass. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it'd be like a temporary thing, you know. But, you know, 4 or 5 albums later, you know, I play bass on Rock and Roll Dreams, and I play keys on like 3 records after that.
Mm-hmm. Is that band still going?
Yes, as far as I'm aware.
Are you still part of that band?
I think Bruce said I'm still a member. so, you know, those guys could call me. I'd love to sit in.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they've evolved to something, as all bands do.
Yeah.
it was a great 6-piece. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like it's just chaotic, you know. I don't know how Bruce organized this all the time to get 6 people to play together.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard enough. Like I said, like 3 people sometimes hard enough. Then you add a 4th person and 6 is kind of.
But Sean left the band, and then I soon did after that. But it was a great, I'm just so happy Bruce asked me to be part of his music.
Yeah.
You know, and get to see another songwriter. And the thing is though, it's like, we didn't agree on like a lot.
Yeah.
So I had to be like, why can't I play it this way? He goes, no, play it this way. And I'm like, well, I guess this is why I've got the eyebrows, you know? So probably halfway through playing with Temperance League, I started the eyebrows kind of as an experiment. Mm-hmm. The experiment was, Sean, let's play with people who instead are like us. They're very different.
Okay.
Like, so different from us. That way we'll learn, and it might be something interesting. So we've had, I counted 18 people in and out of that eyebrows experiment.
Yeah.
Until today. It's been stable since... The eyebrows have been stable since Darren joined, which I think was 20... I can't remember. I'll have to look it up.
It's been 2 or 3 years at least.
It might have been 4 or 5.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know he's been in the band for a little while.
But what the funny thing is, the experiment landed where what we realized is, you know what, it's probably easier to play with people who are more similar to you. Because Darren, if you sat all 3 of us down... Our musical repertoires and tastes are very different, but if you look outside, they're very the same.
I've got to get Darren on here because I know he's got a lot of history.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
he
and Sean, if he ever wants to be on here, I have drummers on here.
I think they would both love to. Darren, he lets out nuggets of knowledge and experience of like he's got firsthand experience with all these rock and roll punk rock legends. Mm-hmm. You know, he was there for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Sean's a man of a different era. He DJs with 45s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I love his turntable he's got too.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
he's unique. Mm-hmm. He truly is.
Yeah.
Like some people say, oh, he's unique. No, he's very and very interesting. You know, and very into. I would say, you know, 60s, 70s rock and roll, but lately classical.
Okay.
we all changed the years.
Everybody kind of goes through those phases. And
yeah.
I'm into stuff now I wasn't into like 10, 15 years ago.
But, you know, it's the first Eyebrows record volume, I think, is really influenced by John Locke's style of bass playing, which is more reggae ska. Like, he's this worldly reggae ska bass player, right? And when we go on band trips, we would make him choose the music because we're like, we need to learn, like, what, you know, what's your world like? Like, tell us more, you know, dive deeper. And that, to me, that's what a lot of the eyebrows were about at one time. I think now we're just, I don't know, I'm trying to write songs that aren't so short. And Sean likes the short song, and I want to explore more.
Yeah. You know, I think that's what we're going to try to do with this new band is because Van Huskins was always mostly short songs. We wrote a couple of epics for us, like three and a half minutes long.
Yeah.
I think with this band, Eric's like, well, maybe we can jam a little bit more on this. I'm like, that sounds good to me. We, especially if we got two bass players, we're going to have to explore some things.
That's going
to
be hot. Two bass players?
Yeah. But it might be, we were going to try to have it ready by October 7th, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just think it's too ambitious to, I don't want to rush it out there.
Yeah. Well, I thought September 1st would be enough to have a working hand, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to force things, even when they're not ready.
Yeah.
Was it, don't let perfect get in the way of doing something.
Yeah. Just do the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my life motto. Don't let perfect get in the way. It ain't, nothing's perfect. It'll never be.
That's a pretty good motto to have.
Hey, Oliver.
I can get some barking on the podcast for a minute.
You're having fun down there.
So we were talking about the first record.
We're about ready to put out our third record.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about that, too, for sure.
The first two records, Volume, was pretty much based on songs I wrote between 2014 mm-hmm. and 2018. Recorded at Mitch Easter's. Had it mastered by Greg Calvi. Mm-hmm. I went with a promotion agency. Probably paid too much money for that. Well, you know, the funny thing is, it's like when we started out, I wanted everything to be perfect.
Yeah.
Guys, chill. They're not going to chill. Yeah, I wanted everything to be perfect. And so I thought, I love working with Mitch. I've done like 8 or 9 records with him. So
I've thought about how cool it'd be to go record with him sometime.
Man, the thing about Mitch is, so like I said, I've worked with other famous producers. The thing about Mitch is he knows how to get you to do something without saying it. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're in this one, actually on Red Dress.
Yeah.
He had a 12, for some reason, when I came to the studio, there's a 12 string electric sitting in the corner, just sitting there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's this? He's like, oh, you should pick it up. I'm like, yeah, I think maybe, let me play this part on it for Red Dress. You know, and that became the part like down, na 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 between the ooze and the phaser name. Silver lights, July 04. Ways of bliss I never knew. I'm Just little things like that. Or even like once I was like, Mitch, shouldn't we use like these kind of mics on the drums? And he looked at me and he said, Jay, the microphones you mentioned are based on the microphones that are sitting right there. I'm like, I'm not gonna ask any more questions. I'm not gonna question any decision you make.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And the thing about Mitch is I think part of the reason why you do this podcast is you crave a musical conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to do in Charlotte.
Yeah.
You know, and with Mitch, you're talking to someone who's has a rich musical experience. Mm-hmm. He understands music, he understands production, he understands music history, he understands personalities,
mm-hmm.
and he's funny.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like I crave time with him,
mm-hmm.
because you learn stuff, you're entertained, and it's all based on just musical knowledge and experience. And I'm like, oh my god, like they're like maybe in Nashville you could have a interesting conversation about music with the postman or
yeah,
woman.
Yeah.
You know, here,
yeah,
not so easy.
You gotta seek it out.
Yeah, or if you do, people you know think you're being a little weird or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love working with Mitch for all those reasons.
Yeah. Did you record any of the new record with him?
We did half of it there.
Yeah. I mean, you said you'd recorded half of it. So,
I consider this third album, Double Take, a concept record, but okay. not so much based on a melody or idea. Like, we're going to write about cornflakes, you know.
Yeah.
it's more about seeing a song from two different musical palettes.
Okay.
Because I think the thing about the Eyebrows is I think we're a good studio band and I think we're a great live band. And a lot of bands, they either do one or the other. Mm-hmm. They don't do both well. I think we do both well. So I want to kind of show that off. And we were going to record side two direct to tape, direct to four track,
mm-hmm.
in Mitch's studio. I was going to film it. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Mitch is right before us and after us, he's recording this little band called The Baseball Project.
Oh, yeah.
You may have heard of
it. Yeah.
Oh, that's the other cool thing. Like, we're sitting in the studio, right? And I'm looking at pictures of where Mike Mills and Peter Buck and, mm-hmm. you know, Larry McCaffrey and all of them were sitting and standing. And I'm just like, they were right here just like, you know, like hours ago.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I, you know, a band like us, Mitch likes us, so, you know. But a band like that, they have a lot of demands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, or maybe they don't. I mean, I'm probably getting to things I shouldn't say.
You would imagine they might have a lot of demands.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, you would think ex-members of REM would have demands or have certain things that was on Mitch's mind. So it just didn't work out. But Mitch looked at me and goes, hey, why don't you just record it yourself? You know, he goes, I can mix it, or you can mix it. And I was like, I do demos all the time,
mm-hmm.
but I don't do like studio records here. And Darren's like, Jay, your demos are really good. Like, just why don't you give it a shot? So I did,
mm-hmm.
and that's side two of the album.
Okay.
It's but the versions are three or four of them were recorded live on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a little more interesting.
So now is it the same songs on side one and side two? It's just a studio version and a live version?
Mm-hmm. But side two contains two cuts that aren't on side one.
Yeah.
Little experiments.
Yeah.
But they're done, like there's one song, you know, done kind of in a like remote, like a song, Open Mic Tuesday. It's done like Ramones-y, mm-hmm. Misfits kind of style.
Okay.
Side two, it's more like, I don't know. It's to me, it's more like maybe Americana-ish,
yeah.
like Fender, clean Fender,
yeah,
like reverb-ish.
Mm-hmm.
kind of style, which I kind of like a little bit better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we tried different styles, tempos, and the whole live thing. There's an energy you get live that, like, mm-hmm. it's just different. You know, I was talking to Bill Skibb, who mastered the record. He works at Third Man Mastering.
Okay.
He's built studios like, you know, Steve Albini's Electrical Audio. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he's been around.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you think, man? Is this like a glorified EP? He's like, oh, no. This is great. It's like two different sonic palettes, two different visions. Mm-hmm. And I like albums. Like, we're doing an online album release. Mm-hmm. I did one for Fight Flight where you dove into the record. So it kind of got my mind around, what if we just dove into the songs and give two different versions of it? Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, side one's called Double Take and then side two's called Take Two. Mm. You know, but hopefully, I'm just kind of curious, like, which version of which song is going to be more popular.
Oh, yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what people say after they hear it.
Yeah.
Like, which one they like better.
And yeah, I'm very curious. I mean, it's not putting up, you know, they're two different things. Mm-hmm. You know, one's mostly recorded live while we were drinking a lot.
Yeah.
And then one's mostly in the studio when we're, you know, very thinking about what we're doing mm-hmm. for some of it. So
yeah,
there is some mindlessness on it.
I'm definitely looking forward to hearing it.
I'll play you a track or two before we leave. I may let you debut it. You say, yeah, because we're from outer space. Spread your wings and save the human race. Calling the online release Behind the Echoes. If you sign up on our website at the-eyebrows.com, you can sign up, and for 5 days we'll preview all the songs, give you all a bunch of behind the scenes looks at like what we're doing in the studio, mm-hmm. from my mix sessions. We do a voiceover commentary, which I really enjoy listening to. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Of us listening to the songs and talking about them. But it gives... I like to do this like before we even release the record. Just release it to our fans. Mm-hmm. And give our fans an opportunity to get the record before anyone else. And then, to be honest, I'm still thinking about the release strategy. Mm-hmm. Like, when do you make the vinyl available exactly? You know, well, as soon as it comes in.
Yeah.
So we actually done pre-sales. We've done really well on pre-sales.
Yeah.
We've exceeded my expectations on pre-sales to our fans who have not heard one song.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, we'll probably ink out singles between now and Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, keep the online release, what they call like evergreen. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to learn more about the album, you can dive in whenever.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to mention that, and you kind of took the lead for me, but how you do a lot of, like, the promotion that you do for your releases is it's more in depth than most local bands do.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a mailing list, you've got the Eyebrows Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Or, you just do a lot of things with it that are like most local bands don't think to do. It's,
man, so my COVID hobby. Mm-hmm. So here's my COVID hobby.
Yeah.
I had 500 copies of Fight Flight. Still have probably like 300 there.
I need to buy one from you before
I'll give it to you. You know, sitting in my basement, mm-hmm. and all of our live shows were shut down. Mm-hmm. So I was like, how in the hell am I going to, I can't have these sitting here. You know, my wife's going to leave me. It's like, it's a lot of money, right? So I just started searching. I saw this ad. It resonated with me because, mm-hmm. you know, it said, did you spend like all this money on publicity, but what did you get back? It's like, yeah, I got a lot of great articles written by mm-hmm. some great magazines and great writers, but that didn't translate to connecting with fans mm-hmm. or selling records.
Yeah.
You know? So my COVID hobby was learning about what music marketing is. And to me, it's not about, I mean, to me, it's about making connections with people. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that online? I'll go on the record for this. I think we were one of the first bands to ever live stream mm-hmm. on our own. I remember when, you know, COVID shut things down. What's that Irish band's name? They did like a live stream, and it was like total, like no one was there. It was like broadcast quality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but to me that fell kind of flat. You know, it wasn't like, hey, here's a band in their basement mm-hmm. with crappy lights and a crappy camera, but they understand sound. Mm-hmm. So we're able, and sounds pretty good. I think we're the first bands to do like, you know, 8 microphones live yeah. themselves without a broadcast company. Mm-hmm. And then soon the world caught up
yeah.
and did it way better than we could. But yeah, you know, it's, to me, it's like, I always scratch my head. It's like, I never saw Charlotte as a place for me personally to mm-hmm. make a living as a musician or any band I'm in.
Yeah.
To me, it was always somewhere else. Somewhere, we're always popular in another town.
Yeah.
But not in Charlotte. And I thought a lot about that. I thought, you know, so once you start learning about music marketing, you see where you're popular. What I realized is that the eyebrows are a real, like any kind of power pop, garage rock, psychedelic rock, weirdo band, mm-hmm. art rock band is, your fans are kind of like everywhere in little niche spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then those numbers add up. So it's like, wow, we're actually really popular in like LA for some reason, mm-hmm. or that month, you know. Why is that? You're like, why do we have listeners there? Like, who are they? What do they do?
Yeah.
You know. But you get to learn a little bit things about like that, and then you like you develop like I've got you just learn to connect with people. Like I've got this great fan in Canada, you know. A lot of them playing bands too. Mm-hmm. You know, he messages me like at least once a week. Messages back and forth about you. Just connect with people
yeah.
who are into the same things you are in. They just don't live in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you could spend a lot of time getting people in Charlotte out to your show, but do they really like your music?
Yeah. Well, Charlotte's just always been a weird town for the music. There's always been a lot of great talent in Charlotte, a lot yeah. of great bands. But yeah. just as far as like, I mean, right now people seem to be going out to shows.
Yeah.
And we'll see how long that lasts. But, yeah. you know, there's always been a real hard time, like, getting a good, solid following to come out and see you play.
Oh, it's like with the eyebrows, like, I do admit I spend money on ads, mm-hmm. and we break even.
Yeah. I don't say I spend money on ads every now and then. You got to try something.
we do make money on some of our merch, but we break even. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody has a good time.
That's the way we look at it, you know. But it might even cost us money sometimes, but everybody has a good time.
We've been playing almost exclusively like non-traditional spaces. Mm-hmm. I give Sean at Happy Nomad Booking a shout out. He's been he took us on as a client, which I'm very thankful for.
Yeah,
well, he and I were huge Guided by Voices fans. He's like I'm a big fan, but he's like a bigger fan.
Yeah,
you know. So that really resonated with both of us, and we both we're playing like art galleries, bars that maybe not always have music, or and the funny thing is I found is that a good sound's really important to us. The sound mm-hmm. in these dives are way better than the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, Charlotte's gotten better at sound, live sound, but for a while it's just like I couldn't stand going out to see bands because I couldn't understand what the heck they were singing about. Even if they're screaming and the guitars are loud.
Yeah.
You know, so good sound's kind of like a new thing. Mm-hmm. but yeah, the sound of these little places, it's been incredible. Maybe it's because, you know, our band, we know how to, we're more of like a dynamic band. Mm-hmm. You know, we're loud when we're loud. We're not when we're not. We know how to sing into microphones.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't know how to do that, believe it or not.
Trust me, I don't.
Well, I mean, there's like, I'll be a little bit of a nerd. You understand the polar pattern. Like, this is a cardioid mic, mm-hmm. and it goes around this, like yeah. this. that orange one's a super cardioid, so it's like really in front. But you also got to know like frequency response. Like these Shures, they're pretty good for about everything. Mm. But if you have a certain kind of voice, maybe another microphone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a Johnny Cash. You
gotta see, that's why I like playing punk rock. I don't have to worry about all that.
Yeah. I mean, I try not to worry, but I wanted the show to be a good experience.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. I mean, you know, yeah. I try with my limited knowledge, but I taught myself how to do everything. So.
But I hate being held hostage by like the sound person. And you want to enable that sound person to lift them up and make them feel good about mm-hmm. what they're doing, and but not telling them what to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to figure out a way to get what you need out of someone who may not, who is probably maybe working with a crappy system that they don't know. Yeah. I've run sound many times and didn't understand the board that well.
Yeah.
You know,
that's one thing I say about like sound guys. You never know, like, cause talking about some clubs, somebody's asking who the sound guy was. Like, well, yeah. I don't know who they're going to be the night that we play. Yeah. Cause you never know who's going to be in there. They might have a regular sound guy, but he probably plays in a band and he might have a show that night. And so then they've got some other guy there and he may or may not know what he's doing with the board. And we're just going to go in there. We're going to play. All right. Like, don't worry about it.
Well, there's a lot to be said about that. You know, like Sean and I, we hate it when the sound person starts miking up the amps, we're like, we start rolling our eyes. And it's like, dude, all you need to do is vocals and maybe kick.
Yeah. Especially in a smaller place.
Because a band knows how to fill up the sound. Mm-hmm. And when you start fucking with that, it messes up the performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I hate it when, like, I hear too much, like, chorus or delay in the vocal mic. Mm-hmm. It's like, please take all that bullshit off.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't tell if I'm singing in tune or not.
Yeah.
But anyway, sound's gotten better in Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's gotten better. It used to be, oh my God, I couldn't stand going out for a while. It's like, what are y'all getting out of this?
You know? I've been to some of those shows, I think. Yeah. Maybe not the same ones, but I have definitely been to some of those shows.
Yeah. Sorry. Soapbox. Asshole, getting off soapbox.
Well, man. I've got a few that I try not to get on too often. I've got a few that I keep thinking about getting on that I just back myself off of. Just because I'm like, why do I want to open that can of worms? Like, I can just not say anything and it'll be fine.
Well, no, so I'm not saying, like, so-and-so sucks. I'm saying you got to learn how to work with the team you have.
Yeah.
Whether they're on your team or not. Right.
That's what I always say. Like, you know, don't worry so much about it. You're just going to have to get there and we're going to have to figure it out that night and work through it, whatever it is.
You know what's the worst thing? Like, you go out to, like, these pavilion concerts or whatever, mm-hmm. and all you hear is sub.
Yeah.
Just take the subs out. It sucks. It ruins it for everybody. It's stupid. Take all your subs out. So I say.
So when is the record coming out? I mean, you say you're not really sure you're going to about that.
If we got it in time for September 29th to ship, mm-hmm. that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Late September, early October.
Yeah. Now, is it going to be available online, like through Bandcamp first, or are you going to wait until the record,
the
physical copies?
Don't like Bandcamp.
That's right. I think you've talked about this before. Well, I've seen you talk about this before.
It ties into the whole, like, digital community thing. I think Bandcamp is, like, it's a cultural dead zone. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you can get an email list up there, but you can't really nurture people or make them more interested or entertain them on Bandcamp. Yeah. You can put something up.
And that's it.
I mean, I have got digital downloads up there. I was thinking of just putting digital downloads up there for, like, $20,000. Just so people would, like, what the hell, and just go to my website.
Yeah.
Or one of my social media pages where it's a little more engaging. Because, like I said, I think, you know, music is a lot about making connections with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, our band, we're not exactly extroverts. Right? We're not exactly social butterflies. Mm-hmm.
That tends to be, musicians are tend to be, about half of us at least tend to be that way.
I mean, I'm not actively talking about my band all the time to people. As a matter of fact, I is the last thing I talk about usually. You know, unless someone gets interested, then you give them a little information, and if they, you can kind of gauge, like, you know, do they like Butthole Surfers or not?
No,
no, that's not my litmus test. But
that's a pretty good one, though.
Yeah, if they do, then they're definitely gonna be friends.
Yeah.
But the whole, to me, maybe to answer your question, it's really finding people, creating like a social connection, you know, being genuine with people, and if they're interested in the art, include them in it, or include them in behind the scenes. Like I'm the kind of person, like I got a record, I would read all the liner notes, I read, you know, magazine articles, interviews, like just listen to every record they ever put out. Yeah, that's the kind of person I am.
Yep, same way.
And in this way, I may have enabled people to like get all this info for free. All it costs is your email address. And what I found is once you give all this really interesting background info to people, not charging them for it, they do reciprocate. They'll buy stuff.
Yeah,
even if they don't have a CD player.
Yeah.
Or a vinyl record.
Yeah.
You know, I just want it. Just want to have it.
I've said that plenty of times. Like, if you make a connection with somebody and they really like your music, they will buy that CD even if they'll never play it.
Yeah, and it's just really interesting that, you know, like I said, we've got fans all over the United States, all over the world. You know, not a whole lot. Well, actually, you know, I'd say it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you've got like 300 on our mailing list. It's a lot. You know, 2/3 of them have made a purchase of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, our videos have up to 500,000 views on them, which a lot of that's not organic.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was during COVID. but yeah, we've got a cool ecosystem going on. You know, I met some people in New York that heard of my band.
Yeah.
Cause I said, well, how'd you hear of it? I was looking up underground rock bands. I was like, wow, thank you.
Yeah. You know? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's getting there. Hopefully we've got a few more records in us.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
I love the band. I think it's a great band.
Thank you. It's really, we're a bunch of weirdos.
It helps that all three of you are just super nice guys, too.
Oh, thank you. yeah, we're pretty tolerant of each other.
Yeah.
Well, me and Sean, we played music for 23 years, and you know what that's like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, getting a note, and the person they were when you met them and the person they are now, like, we're totally different.
Oh, yeah.
We're all different people.
Definitely.
But there's still that core, you know, I got you. I got your back, whatever you need. You know, life things that we have that other bands don't have.
Yeah.
You know, we could cancel practice because someone's having a bad day and we all go to their house and make sure they're feeling better. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
that's great.
It's that kind of band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like, I think the really cool thing about our band is because we're not interested in like a label or any of that stuff, we're free to make the music we want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was on labels, like, you know, like the RCA stint back in the 90s, suddenly you know, who you are and the music you make isn't you anymore.
Yeah.
It's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do what they like, cut you. or even when I was on the indie label, like, they wanted, like, how do you feel like your songs in horror movies? I'm like, for real? For real? I mean, like, yeah, but which one?
Yeah.
What was the one about the tying the mouth to the butt?
Oh, the human centipede?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah, I was like, hell no. Stupidly, I should have said yes, right? I was like, hell fucking no. So tell me about the movie.
Out of all of them, it was the human centipede. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was like, hell no. And maybe, like I said, maybe I should have had it on there. But then, like, when you take a song like Red Dress, the video really changes the song.
Mm-hmm.
Because the song, that's the song on Volume that a lot of people like. You know, at the time when I wrote the song, I think Sean and I were standing, we were single. We were standing in Snug Harbor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
and some girl was in a red dress, and I just looked at him. I said, "Red dress?" He's like, "Yeah." Like, you know, it was a nice looking human being there. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a stupid song about it. Maybe it's probably about a lot of different things at a time, but that was the central thing. But then, you know, it was time to make a video. I had this idea. I wanted to do like a Talking Heads video, kind of like where someone else impersonates the singer. And I thought it'd be great. And back at the time when we were making the video, HB2 mm-hmm. was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, that terrible law bathroom bill.
Yeah.
So I thought let's work with some drag queens. Right. And, now the song's got a total different meaning.
Yeah.
You know, is it, you know, it's okay to wear a red dress if you're male or female, mm-hmm. I guess. Could be one of the messages.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I wrote the song, it had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So you gotta be careful where your song goes.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with not being in the human centipede. Yeah, really. I don't want to be, I remember that song with the,
I don't really know that I'd want to be. I mean, that would be some exposure, but I don't know if I'd want to be associated.
Even
with
if
that,
you wrote like just the most awesome rockin' hardcore fuck it song, fuck it all to hell song, maybe then.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, back then I wasn't writing like appropriate songs. I thought, you know, it might get into think of like, you know, ironic, making fun of, kind of. I think you have to be careful about these things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, darn. I could have made tens of cents off of that.
The things you don't have to worry about when you're in a shitty punk band.
Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing about the like, if that song made it Human Centipede, would people might be sitting in a meeting somewhere and someone plays a clip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've been in meetings where people play Red Dress.
Yeah.
Kind of make fun of me a little bit. I'm like, I got no problem with that video.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your problem?
If they tried to play Human Centipede, you'd be like, oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
I was not thinking.
Yeah. But I do welcome any, you know, movie placements.
So you say the eyebrow or the-eyebrows.com is the place to go for.
Yes, the-eyebrows.com. And there's a dash there because. It's, I don't know. It's really not the name of the band, but it just kind of made, I mean, if you name your band after a body part.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to get the domain for that probably.
You know, I'm still waiting for like, you know, some mascara pencil company to contact us about using a song.
Yeah.
Probably never happened.
And so September 25th to the 29th is when you're doing the online event?
So far, yes. September 25th to 29th. If you sign up.
Is that subject to change or is that?
I think I've got about 80% done of what I want to get done for the album release. I gotta probably crank on that. It's just been hard because I got one hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been making a lot of video. Or putting videos together, mm-hmm. you know, from footage at the studios and or just talking about stuff. Relying on voice to text.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, like, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't enunciate well. it should be ready.
Yeah.
It should be ready. And again, it's just a, you know, deep dive just for people interested in the record. You get to hear the songs before it hits streaming, before anyone else. And on the last day, I do give you an opportunity to get the record if you didn't get it already on the pre-sale,
mm-hmm.
If it interests you. But to me, it's just a really neat way to connect with an artist. Like you said, a lot of bands don't do this.
Yeah.
But I found it to be really fun to make. And really fun to meet new people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if the last day if we're gonna do like a live like spin the wheel giveaway or live concert or what. I don't know what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
Yet, but the first 4 days are just, you know, we like day one you'll get to hear the maybe first two singles, mm-hmm. two three singles on the record, and then you know, commentary track, and then maybe us in the studio goofing off or creating the songs, and maybe some other stuff.
Yeah.
You know. But it'll be more video based than anything else, just because of my hand.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll be fun.
Yeah.
For anyone that chooses to go through it. Love to see you there.
Now, and you have the show September 1st at mm-hmm. Tommy's Pub. Do you have any other shows booked, or are you going to see how this one goes before you do that?
There is one in October I'm entertaining.
And hopefully by October your hand will be even better.
Yeah, so. Well, the thing about playing in November and December, it's like holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a weird show time.
Yeah,
it's more family time.
It's hard to get crowds out. Especially yeah. If you're close to the date.
Yeah, or even releasing a record is a bad time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I in a weird way, I wanted to wait till like February to release this record, but I'm like, I'm going to have a new record done by February. Yeah. You know? I was working on I don't know if it's the fourth Eyebrows record or a solo record, mm-hmm. but as Darren explained to me, we're your band, so we're playing on it anyway. So I'm like, okay. But that, I stopped that with the finger thing. But who knows? I kind of would do a little more solo action shows, which you've seen. Mm-hmm. I got to open up for Ron Sexsmith.
Oh yeah,
a few months ago, and that's when I started tapping into that like let go, be in the moment mm-hmm. power. That a lot of people enjoyed, and I think that tells me I should do more of that. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't like playing without a rock band. I mean, come on, man. It's the most awesome thing to have a rocking band.
Yeah, yeah.
To be in one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing like it.
It's fun.
You're playing solo. It's you're a little bit more on the microscope.
Mm-hmm. I haven't done that yet. I keep talking about eventually I want to try that.
You should. But, I mean, you DJ.
But now the thing is, I got to figure out the time to actually put together a set and all that stuff. That's the hard thing, because I do the podcast, I have the band, then I do the records, and then I work. And
I used to do solo shows at Birdsong Brewing a lot, just because they kind of let me do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And I did. Yeah. Like, if I wanted to screw with the audience a little bit, or... you know, sing and play piano, which I'm okay at, not great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of good to do something where people aren't expecting you.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy those kind of gigs. I don't so much like the tonight at so and so, Jay Garrigan's. Like, oh, so much pressure.
Yeah. I think one of the ones that you played with us, it was you were kind of a last minute replacement for somebody. So that was that was one of those more. Like that.
Is that Petra's?
That was a thing at Tommy's. I think the one at
Petra's. Oh, Tommy's.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember who couldn't play that show.
Was that the one where I was playing, I chose to play acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. No. I know what you're talking about now. But I think some girl came in and no interest in seeing the band, just wanted to chat with people or whatever. Yeah, she was really loud. So I kind of listened to what she was saying, and I sang the words back to her. And like, I see, you know, my friends and fans, like they're dying, like they're mortified and they're laughing, because she totally doesn't, she's totally in her own orbit, right? I like doing stuff like that. It's just kind of unexpected. I didn't expect to do it, but I thought, well, she's kind of ruining my vibe, so I'm just gonna add to the vibe that she's entering into this space. I see a lot of music and art as, like, my job is to be the catalyst. Mm-hmm. It's not to be the focus.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Because being the catalyst, you can't always be blamed for the outcome. But you can be blamed for causing the change.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, I enjoy seeing art and music and performance more as, like, a catalyst toward something. And the live thing is live is totally out of control. Mm-hmm. Which I'm worried, because now I have to be in control because of my broken hand.
Yeah, but,
you know, when the experience is totally out of control, and that, oh my, did they just do what? Like, you don't have to light your hair on fire or anything.
Yeah.
But, or even like lyrically, I often just make stuff up on newer songs. Or like I said, if I see something, I sing about it.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. And I, my brain goes there.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
There's a demon in my head, and my rival's in the sky. There's an angel in the road, but she's done blood dry. There's a demon in my head, all the words that we said, you split me open in the dread. There's a demon in my head.
You asked me a lot of really interesting stuff. Let's talk about Charlotte just for a few minutes.
Yeah.
What's going on? Let's talk about Charlotte. It's like, you know, actually, let's talk about aging.
All right.
All right. So I wound up at this age of 53.
Okay.
Recently here in July.
Yeah. I'll be 50 in February.
So. All right. Well, welcome to you to the club. Very soon. Not yet. Yeah. you know what? I noticed something when the band members started going gray.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't get booked at clubs as much. I don't know why. It's like there's always like a new generation of musicians that come out, and it's all very exciting and new, and they're all excited. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But then you see them looking backwards, like, wait, there's another generation, and they're more interesting than we are. And then that group of people said, wait a second, we're old now, we're in our 30s.
Yeah.
And who are all these whippersnappers snatching up all the... It's like, you know, I think I realized that, like, you have to find fans who resonate with the music and with rock and roll and punk rock and all that. It's people, you know, I would say 36 to 65.
Yeah, that's why I say all the time. You look around, you see people... You don't see kids at our shows.
Yeah, and it's like, and you got to be okay with it. So first, like, step one, you got to be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know? And also, you know, there are clubs with business models who want younger demographic, and I get it.
Yeah.
it just hurts.
Yeah. It's like, I can agree with that.
But we played your club every 2 months for years, and now,
yeah,
what's up?
I've noticed that. Like, unless I'm actually actively trying to find a show, like, there's certain clubs that just don't reach out to Van Huskins anymore, or didn't reach out to Van Huskins when we were still a band. Like, you know, we love to play your place. You can call us anytime, right?
Yeah.
But I have to actually try to book the show in order to get to play there, and that's, I get it.
And the whole digital market, like you said, like, I'm one of the bands in town that do pay attention to the digital fan base and all that. A lot of these, the people I learned from, like, they have bands, and they're in their late 20s, early 30s. They understand marketing, like, way more than I ever will. And when they tour, it's like they know exactly what cities have, like, this city's 50 people bought something in the city, and I can go to that club and I can say, hey, I got at least 50 fans in your town. Can I play?
You know,
and that's a whole level of intelligence I don't have. Because because our band, like Eyebrows, like, we like to play a lot of out of town. And, you know, that's what, Asheville, Columbia, Greensboro, Raleigh, Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
You know, Richmond, Spartanburg. But that's not where our digital fans, that's not where our online fans are, but that's all what we can do.
Yeah, because as you get older and have more responsibilities, you can't just hop in the van and go on a 3-week tour.
Yeah, plus you can't do
and
that.
And you can't go to New York for one day.
Yeah, it's hard. After you do that like 3 times, right, you're like, oh, I'm not going to do that again.
Yep.
But it's just, I guess it's just, you know, for me, being now, you know, being a 53-year-old active songwriter, active band, I think it's just kind of really being okay with, like, rock and roll. To me, rock and roll is about being playful and, you know, reckless in childhood and all that, adolescent. But you're not an adolescent anymore, right? So it's just kind of a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a veteran. Like, I was a music veteran when I was 18. Okay, like, I was a has-been at 19. So it's like, how do you navigate, like, this changing world and your place in it? And, like, why do you even do music?
I mean, I think everybody I talk to on this podcast pretty much says the same thing. It's something I feel like I have to do. You know. And I think we're all in that same boat where we feel like, well, I want to keep doing this, and I don't care if it's like something that generally you'd think that young people would do. And I look around at my peers, you know, not my musician peers, but just people I went to school with, and, you know, they've moved on with their lives. I mean, I've had my kids. My kids have grown up, and I'm still out there doing it. We're back out there doing it again. I mean, it's fun. Anytime it comes up at work,
the bottom line.
I work with a bunch of younger kids at work, and sometimes, like, my age gets brought up, and they always tend to forget. They're like, "I can't believe you're that old," and I'm like, "Find you a hobby that keeps you young. Like, just don't give in to sitting on the couch watching TV because, you know, find you a hobby.
Yeah.
Well, for whatever reason that you're just going to sit around and do nothing, don't do that. Find something to do that keeps you active.
Yeah, man. I pretty much agree with everything you said.
Yeah.
You know, you do it because you're compelled to. You have to. It's like, I have songs in my head all the time, like, that I don't have the time to write down. You know, or I'll sing into my iPhone. You know, and I'll listen to it later and see if that was worth a shit or not.
Yeah.
Or, like, you're noodling on the guitar and you record it. I record a lot of snippets on my my iPhone, you know, and then may turn into a song or not. You know, sometimes I'll write 2 songs that seem to be worth a shit, like, right after another, same day, same hour, or then I'll go 6 months with, like, struggling, like, I'll never write a song like that again. They all suck. But, you know, it's like, they come out. I've always wanted to be more like a songwriter, like someone like Benji Hughes. Like, he can mm-hmm. tie the lyrics and the narrative and the music together.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm there or I ever will be. You know, I'm more into like, I always hear the music first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all my demos are like la 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 blah blah blah, like just making up like a early REM.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah. Just coming up with a cadence.
Yeah, or you know, some sort of sound, vocal yeah. sounds. Lyrics came usually secondary. I have to put that master's in English to use. Right.
Funny thing is, I love to write, or I used to love to write. I don't do it much anymore. Yeah. I hate to write lyrics. And with Van Huskens, it's always like, we'd write the music, we'd practice the music, rehearse.
Yeah.
We're going to play that show, we're going to play that song at the show, we don't have lyrics for it yet. Yeah. We need to put lyrics to it. Nobody wanted to write lyrics.
Yeah.
So I think with this new band, I want to try to be a little bit more proactive about writing lyrics.
Yeah, to me, it's always like sounds first, and then the words actually somehow end up being really close to the initial sounds
mm-hmm.
for some reason, which I'm thankful I can weave. You know, it's kind of like James Joyce novels, like they're novels meant to be heard,
mm-hmm.
not so much read. You know, it's kind of like coming at it from that kind of standpoint.
Yeah.
But what are the songs on Devil Take about? Well, one I wrote, say yeah, it's kind of, I do want this to be the new like sports stadium stomper. you know, wrestling theme entrance kind of.
Yeah,
say yeah.
Open mic. Somebody's making a wrestling movie, they can reach out to you.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But to me, it uses Darren's wife Joy said it sounds like a Kiss song. I'm like, that's good, right?
Yeah.
And actually, it uses like Ace Frehley kind of voicings. Mm-hmm. You know how he does is like he'll bar an A and then maybe with a D.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He does a lot of that stuff. Yeah. Like pawns like that. So, Paul Stanley, if you're hearing it, you want to revive your career, I got a song for you. All right, buddy. That's very pretentious to say, though.
Yeah.
Open Mic Tuesday, it's more of a... It's literally about working sound at an open mic,
mm-hmm.
which Sean and I both have done.
Yeah.
at the Evening Muse, it's a really hard sound gig.
Because
you're dealing with... You know, every act's got another thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, from pre-recorded tracks to playing ukulele to whatever. And you're usually dealing with people who've got very little stage experience, so they don't understand how to plug things in.
Yeah.
How far off to be from the mic. You know, like, I can't hear you. It's like, get up to the mic. You know, like, what's that sound? You're making that sound with your mouth. Stop doing that. You know, but it's kind of about... A little bit about that, but it's also a little bit of a love story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song on there we wrote in the studio. I wanted to write a song in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much of a song that we usually write. It's kind of like reading a scroll.
Okay.
Or like, you know, let's go back to Canterbury Tales. It's like, you know, you're reading about what's present and you can't really see what the future or the past was. It's kind of like one of those songs.
Okay.
but I really wanted to write a song in the studio. I wanted the studio song to be more like, you know, exploratory. No, it's straight ahead rock.
Yeah, okay.
there's a song called You Shook Everything, which is our cosmic journey. It's super cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it on, I used a 5-string guitar. Or a string with 5 strings mm-hmm. in the Keith Richards tuning. You can play any Stone song on it,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It sounds nothing like a Stone song the way I did it. And then there's like a Velvet Underground-ish type song.
Mm-hmm.
When you fall in love, you know. And actually, I played it at the show we did together.
Okay.
But I always thought it was a good song, so... You know, side one's got the more velvety underground version. Side two, we added drums.
Mm-hmm.
So, But I hope people enjoy the record.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun to make, and it's a little bit of a gamble doing like not a traditional 10-song album. I mean, it's a 10-song album.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually a 12-song album, but
yeah,
it's not what you expect. You know, if someone was listening to the record not knowing any of the background on it, mm-hmm. they might be confused. You know, they just flipped it over or just listened to the CD all the way through.
Yeah.
But maybe that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Being the catalyst.
I like the idea. It's definitely, it's a cool idea, something yeah. different to do. And yeah. like you say, it kind of showcases the two sort of dynamics of the band.
Yeah. Yeah, live in studio.
Not necessarily the two, but two of the dynamics of the band.
Two of the dynamics. I would say explore the dummies in the band. All three of us.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting at an hour and 48 minutes.
All right, man.
So unless you got anything else, I'd...
And another thing.
This one might, once I put music in the mic.
This has been a Gabba Gabba Hunt Media Production.
Like you mentioned, like the bands you're in. I'm like, I may have skipped a band or two. Like, yeah. What about all that time we spent together? I'm like, yeah, I love that time we spent together. I just didn't remember it
yeah.
well enough. Sorry.
I did that. Like, I was talking to somebody about something. All of a sudden, I was doing the podcast. I'm like, oh, I completely forgot about this band that yeah. I should have mentioned on the last episode or something. Like,
I don't mind if you cut down to 20 minutes. Seriously.
Yeah, well, I won't do that for sure. But
yeah, man. Bye!